Good morning, Colorado. You're listening to the Daily Sun Up with the Colorado Sun. It's Friday, September 16th. Today, we're speaking with the Colorado Sun's water reporter, Chris Outcault, who joined forces with five other news outlets in the Southwest United States to report on the dwindling Colorado River that supplies water to seven states, more than 24 Native American tribes, and the country of Mexico. Before we begin, we'd like to thank our sponsors, Pinnacle Assurance. Pinnacle Assurance provides workers' comp insurance and was named one of the most community-minded companies in Colorado for the third year in a row. Last year, Pinnacle donated $1.5 million in grants, donations, and scholarships to Colorado communities. Learn how Pinnacle puts care to work at pinnacle.com. Now, let's go back in time with some Colorado history. On this day in 1949, city delegates gathered on the south side of the National Western Stock Show grounds in northeast Denver. They broke ground for a, quote, mammoth new municipal stockyard stadium. Coloradans today know the gray structure with a graceful curved roof as the Denver Coliseum. Since the early 20th century, the stock show had boasted its own arena, but its iron framework obstructed views and made the structure feel cramped. To better serve the stock show and lure additional business, the city approved an 8,000-seat, $3 million structure. It opened on January 10, 1952, with a program celebrating farming and ranching. Governor Dan Thornton, a cattleman from Gunnison County, presided at the inaugural event. For nearly a quarter century, it hosted musical acts including Black Sabbath, Eric Clapton, Creedence Clearwater Revival, Bob Dylan, Led Zeppelin, The Rolling Stones, and so many more. By the mid-1970s, musicians had moved to McNichols Arena and then the Pepsi Center. The Coliseum remained an active venue, hosting smaller events. Before we continue, a message from our sponsors at Xcel Energy. Xcel Energy can help you find ways to keep your home or business running smoothly while reducing energy use and saving you money. Find everyday tips for using less energy and simple ways to manage your energy budget at xcelenergy.com. Next, our feature story.
Welcome back to the Daily Sun Up Podcast, Colorado. I'm Carol Wood, guiding you through today's conversation, and I'm grateful to be here with you today. And I'm super excited to be sitting with the Colorado Sun's water reporter, Chris Outcault. Hey, Chris.
Hello.
Can't wait to share with our listeners this series that you worked, I think, for months on and partnered with five other newsrooms around the region to give our listeners and our readers a one-of-a-kind, in-depth look at the water crisis that is impacting the southwestern part of the United States. Tell us what you did.
Yeah, so this is a series that we've been working on, as you said, a collaborative series that's been running all this week and is wrapping up today with a couple of pieces that will focus on Colorado River water topics in both Utah and Wyoming. So this was sort of a regional project with partners at news outlets that are in places that also use water from the Colorado River. So 40 million people are using the water in the river. It's used to irrigate millions of acres of farmland. And although Colorado is the headwater state and much of the water originates here, the stress that's been put on the supplies in the Colorado River recently with drought and challenges with soil moisture and high temperatures has sort of stressed that system all over the Southwest. So the idea was to get a group of newsrooms together that exist in these different places and share some stories and work on a project that was sort of collaborative across that geographical area. So that's kind of what we ended up with this week, is a series of stories that touch on different topics related to the Colorado River from each of these states, from Mexico, from tribal perspectives. And yeah, it's been nice to have it on the site all week.
Yeah, it's really an incredible read. And I'm going to play a clip here from a water policy researcher named Jeff Lucas. It kind of gives us a little bit of background also on the Colorado River Compact.
The Compact holds up, but barely. There were two main failings of the Colorado River Compact. The first was who it left out. The other major failing was that it was founded on inflated estimates of what was really available to divide among the states. Temperatures have gone up in all seasons, and the warming makes the atmosphere a thirstier sponge. that wants to draw water away from plants, soils, snow, and the river itself. And so less of the precipitation that feeds the river actually makes it into the river. We won't go back to some golden era. We're sort of stuck with a new shifting, we can't even call it a normal. It's going to be something we'll have to keep adapting to as we go.
Yeah, that gives us some great perspective. And I also was hoping that you could tell us a little bit about the other newsrooms with which we partnered to do this.
Yeah, for sure. So this is, as you said, there's a group of six of us. And in addition to the Colorado Sun, we've been working in the months leading up to the project running this week with the Associated Press, the Albuquerque Journal, Arizona Daily Star, the Salt Lake Tribune, and the Nevada Independent. So the AP is handled a couple different locations, and then each of the other partners have been producing pieces that relate to the state that they cover regularly.
Well, and like you mentioned earlier, also, it's not just, you know, Wyoming and Utah, Nevada, New Mexico, Colorado, Arizona, and California, and Mexico that are impacted. It is also a lot of tribal nations. And we also have a clip from Rory Magenti, who's the board chairman of the Grand Canyon Resort Corporation. And he talks about the water issue here with the Colorado River from the tribal perspective. Let's give that a listen.
As Indian nations, we have every right to have a fair share of our water allocation. When I was growing up as a young man, I was always told by my elders that with the land comes the water. But we did not understand that we also had to sign certain pieces of documents to say we have water rights. We need water more than ever. We are not able to sustain any development because water is not available. It's being trunked and funneled and piped 39 miles away just so we can have water and daily consumption.
To kind of piggyback on what he had to say, can you also talk a little bit about what we hope our readers and listeners get out of this project?
Yeah, so I hope it's been an enjoyable read for the Sun audience. You know, we're first and foremost a statewide news outlet, but in starting this position at the beginning of the year, covering water and particularly focusing on the Colorado River, I mean, it impacts the water that's generated here at the headwaters is used in so many other places. So I think there's a real value, hopefully, for our readers in not just reading about a piece specifically that we reported from Colorado that ran on Wednesday, but also hearing from these other parts of the Southwest that are connected by this river. So it was kind of a unique opportunity to give our readers a little bit more of a regional perspective on where this water goes and how it's used and what some of the stressors are, even beyond the boundaries of the Colorado state lines. So I hope that's been interesting for folks to see this week.
Yeah, it's been wonderful. And I will direct our listeners to coloradosun.com. And we have a button on our main website that you can click on, and it will take you to all of the stories in this series from the week. And it says the Colorado River Compact 100 years later. So if you all get a chance to go click on that at coloradosun.com, you can read some really fascinating stories that Chris and our colleagues from these other news organizations assembled. Chris, I know, like you referenced, you started at the Colorado Sun in January, and I think these 9 months have been a whirlwind for you. The fact that you were able to put this together has been a real gift to all of us, not just your colleagues, but to our readers as well. So thank you, and thanks for dropping by today to explain it a little bit more. And for any of our listeners who have questions or thoughts about the Daily Sun Up podcast, drop us an email at podcast@coloradosun.com. And thanks to Chris and to everyone who helped produce today's podcast and to our production partners, Pirate Audio. Have a wonderful day, and I sincerely hope you can join us for the next Daily Sun Up.
Read more at coloradosun.com. Finally, here are a few stories that you should know about today. Colorado communities are turning to teenagers and retirees to help with early education staffing concerns before the state's free preschool program starts next fall. Their efforts are part of a push to prepare for the major preschool expansion, even though the state does not yet know how many instructors will be needed. An estimated 66,000 4- and 5-year-olds will be eligible for the program. Education officials are predicting many parents will want more than just the 10 free hours per week covered by the new initiative. A new study on Denver's homeless population finds that moving people to apartments lowers their chances of needing an emergency room or going to jail, but it doesn't lower their risk of dying. The study reviewed Denver's Social Impact Bond Program, which has housed hundreds of people in the past 7 years. Researchers found a 40% reduction in both arrests and ER visits. But they concluded that a few years in supportive housing was not enough to reverse the long-term health effects and stress of being homeless, which often include mental health problems and addiction. Political TV ad season is in full swing, and it's a $45 million business in Colorado so far this year as candidates try to reach voters before the November 8th election. The Colorado Sun analyzes political TV ad contracts filed with the Federal Communications Commission to identify spending trends and outliers. Nearly 40% of the ad spending this year is in Colorado's new 8th Congressional District, a contest that could decide which party controls the U.S. House. Millions of dollars are also being spent in the governor's contest. For more information on all these stories, visit our website, www.coloradosun.com. And don't forget to tune in again on Monday. Before we go, we encourage you to check out a new podcast from our friends at KUNC called The Colorado Dream. Here's a sneak peek.
The new season of The Colorado Dream explores the Black immigrant experience in Aurora. It's told through the eyes of one African woman.
I would sit on the beach and just daydream about coming to America.
And the city of Aurora that's working to become an inclusive home for all.
In the last 20 years, we have a new face of the city.
I'm Stephanie Daniel. Join me for the Colorado Dream Newcomers Welcome. You can find the series at KUNC.org or wherever you get your podcasts.
Now, a quick message from our editor.
I'm Larry Rickman, editor and co-founder of the Colorado Sun. The Sun is a public benefit corporation, and we rely on the support of listeners and readers like you to produce the nonpartisan, in-depth news that Colorado needs and deserves. Please consider becoming a Sun member for just $5 a month. Learn more at coloradosun.com. Thanks.